Welcome, everybody, to the PlayStation 5, a central podcast. We give you all the news, the reviews, and the
rumors
on the PlayStation 5 and its upcoming games. I'm joined by the Stealth King, Professor of Gaming, Solid Snake, to my Nathan Drake, Vikarth.
Doing well.
Jordan is in New York celebrating the 4th of July with the fireworks. And where was he today? He was on top of some skyscraper.
He was, and he's doing his little vlogs. I love it. It's just great content. It's what I've signed up for. And he's having a good time with his wife, having the honeymoon of his dreams. So
with his wife,
wish him all the best.
I know. Take a second then, and that's actually a real thing.
Yeah.
There you go. He's a married man.
Keep on keeping.
Speaking of married men, how are you going?
Good. Yeah. Couple months for the old wedding day. I was just telling Dan. This reminds me of the time I was telling you guys I went to Fiji and I was thinking of Assassin's Creed. So I have to hand out the wedding invites, and a lot of them were posting, and then a lot of them were just hand delivering because everyone's close by and we don't need to spend money on posting it out. So then I was like, okay, we've got all these people in these suburbs and we've got to plan a route out and
How do you get everyone's address?
I've got everyone's address.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have people's address off hand.
Oh, well, I've messaged everyone. I know where you live. So I don't
How do you know where I live, man? What the hell?
So I've got this route planned out and all these people, and I'm like, mate, this is easy. This is child's play because I'm 45 hours deep into Death Stranding. You think I don't know how to plan a delivery route? You don't think I know how to plan what supplies to bring? What the weather is, if there's going to be a BT storm, if I need a truck to get carry some materials on the way to build some roads, easy, child's play.
That's the nerdiest thing I think you could have ever said.
Oh, it's exciting times, mate. Exciting times ahead.
And are you going to be playing a certain song at the wedding?
If there's any song, if there's any video game song you could play at your wedding, what would it be?
The Uncharted theme song, As I Walk Down.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Maybe when my fiance walks down the aisle, maybe like the Metal Gear Solid like encounter, like when you're detected by, I don't know.
No. So we've got a lot of news, Vic. We haven't covered the news in a long, long time because we're slack, but we are here now.
Yes,
I've cherry-picked a few stories from over the weeks. We've obviously got the Xbox stuff that's given us some big insights into PlayStation.
And
yeah, there's a lot to discuss there. We'll leave that to the end, so we'll just go through some of the other stories, and then we'll finish off with the Xbox Activision ordeal. Mm. So first off, I want to talk about something that's similar to that story. Mm. PlayStation Studios aim for 90 on Metacritic, says former God of War art director. Rafael Grossetti, the art director of God of War, has said in a Portuguese interview with Flow Games. What do you think, Vi?
Well, the other thing they also mentioned is that some companies, I think with Cyberpunk, was it, remember, Dan? They said their bonuses are tied to the Metacritic. But Grossetti has said here that while Metacritic is important, Sony does not tie any performance bonuses to Metascores, which, yeah, that's great. But
no, they don't do that. But if your day's gone and you get a 70, you get wiped out.
You get wiped out. And that's what I said the longest time. Does this not just bring credence to my theory? Sony, they want to be seen as premium. You know, a Ferrari developed, they're not going to release some budget car. Right, they're not going to release an
quality
underperforming
over quantity,
machine.
Isn't it?
Yeah. and the Metacritic green 90 is like the benchmark. So, Days Gone is in the yellow. You're out of here, mate. We don't want to visit that again.
Well, it's not that the studio are out of it. It's that Days Gone. There won't be a sequel, as they've said.
Yeah, but few people have left. Obviously, unhappy.
And the same with Destruction All-Stars. I mean, that was a big flop for them. That was in the 60s or the 50s.
I don't know why Sony greenlit that. It just made no sense. I know that maybe they're trying to recapture the magic of Rocket League or something. Or,
yeah,
or maybe
they were.
It was their, it was also, I think, for Lucid, maybe their proof of concept that they can do a Twisted Metal game. Mm. But as soon as it did bad, you remember, Sony took that away from Lucid. Now, I forgot which studio they gave it to, one of the newly acquired studios they gave it to, the Twisted Metal game. So, look, I think Metacritic and performance is very, very important to Sony, particularly as they want to, you know, portray themselves as this quality AAA developer, you know. It's akin to, you know, like a Nolan movie. You know, they want it all to be the cream of the crop. Where on the other hand, you've got Xbox who have Redfall.
The Zack Snyder. That's what you're about to say.
They are the Zack Snyder. They
Stop
are.
Stop it.
I didn't even think of that. Stop I did it. Not think of that, but it's true. It's true. Dan, I saw The Flash.
You want to talk Flash?
And it was, right. it was trash. It was so. The CGI, Dan, I have never seen
I like the story and the mother and son elements. That's what got me over the line with that film. Where it was enjoyable.
That's just Flashpoint. And they didn't even do Flashpoint well. Like Zod was just like, there was no,
Zod was
he was just a tool.
Zod was really bad.
And do you want to know the one thing? And this is the last thing I want to say about Flash because we've got a lot to cover today. Do you know the one, the thing that grinds my gears? I hate it, Dan, about The Flash.
Mm.
Not just in The Flash movie, but in the Justice League movie and whatever. The way Ezra Miller runs and does his stupid poses and he flails his arms to the side. I don't know why they are doing that with him. They're trying to make it some stylistic way of him running. And then he has all these weird standing poses as opposed to about to run like his Roadrunner. And he just looks like a goof. And it's just
You have to give him credit for acting against himself the entire movie.
Like, I was pretty impressed. Well, I know Ezra Miller's cancelled and he's done a lot of really bad stuff.
Well, he's not cancelled because
But he did a good job acting, I would say. That was it was acted well.
Didn't he actually bash someone up? I don't want to speak out of turn.
No, he like chokeslammed a girl. Yeah, it was really bad.
What?
And done, yeah.
Chokeslammed a woman.
Yeah.
How was he still?
Choked her to the ground. I don't know, chokeslam might be a bit of a strong word, but he got her by the neck and threw her down on the ground. So it wasn't a WWE
choke. That's unacceptable
chokeslam.
For me. That's unacceptable.
Mate, he did more than that. Yeah. He was like these assault charges and stalking and, oh, man, it was all over the place. But anyway.
So what would you give Flash?
Six?
I gave it 7. I gave it 7, which is quite generous.
It was entertaining. It was entertaining, but, you know.
I like the shot where he's just good. It's like continuous drone shot all the way through the city, sort of into the. I thought that was cool, but besides that, the CGI was poor. So,
if anyone wants to see really bad CGI for a running super speed, watch Bart Allen versus Clark Kent Smallville. it's the greatest CGI you'll ever see.
I might have to watch Smallville.
Do it, Dan.
I might have to watch it one day.
Superman and Lois season 3 is kicking off, mate.
So back to the Metacritic thing, and another thing is we're not going to name names, but we're looking at Street Fighter Metacritic. You can go and have a look, guys. There's one bad review or mixed review. There's 90 positive and there's one mixed by this publication, and you go through and they've given It Takes Two a 6 out of 10, Resident Evil 4 a 7, and you think, who's doing these reviews? And again, you just wonder how they got onto the site in the first place.
And do you know what? That's why I do agree with Sony's, decision not to base compensation or bonuses on Metacritic, because Metacritic often isn't like the real reception of a game. And I understand that Metacritic is like this objective way they can plaster on all their games, that their games are objectively seen as good. But a game like Days Gone, for instance, had a pretty average Metacritic, but look at the user reviews. Everyone liked it favorably. They want a sequel. They enjoyed the game. It was a positive experience for a lot of players. And that's where the Metacritic doesn't really tell the right story. Now, there's a much more to that because obviously the game came out in a broken state with early review copies. So obviously reviewers would have to review that negatively. That probably skew the results down and those sort of things. But I think it goes to show that Metacritic, and we've said this all the time, that it's not the be-all, end-all. right? It is not the be-all, end-all. But it is this easy tool of measurement for just the general consumer to see, is this game going to be good? You just look at the Metacritic. If it's above 90, it must be a phenomenal game. If it's above 80, it must be a great game. Above 70, it must be pretty good.
The same as Rotten Tomatoes, The Dark Knight, I believe one of the greatest films of all time, is at 94. Black Panther is at 96.
Well, that just shows it. That just shows it. But
I mean, come on.
Yeah, see, look, there are times that these aggregation type sites, they fall through the cracks. They're generally just a good metric, but to base bonuses off it, I think is very risky. Exactly. And it's good that Sony doesn't do that. I think it's a good thing that they don't do that, where they show that quality is something a bit more than just a general aggregate of reviews there. You know, but I do understand that the aim of Sony to go, we want everything to be above 90 so that any casual gamer who just sees a PlayStation game just sees above a 9 out of 10 or above. It's like a good badge to have on your first party games.
Like at the end of the day, it's an opinion, right, of someone that's done a review. But when you look at It Takes Two giving it a 6 out of 10, what do you think? Do you think, I can't help but think it's just, how could you come to that conclusion?
Is there a bias involved? Is there a...
Yeah.
Look, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I think the authenticity of the reviewer in playing the game, you know, that it does come into question for me, it's like when a score deviates so much from, when an individual's review deviates so much from the consensus, particularly on games that are not divisive. Like It Takes Two wasn't a divisive game, where some people hated it, some people loved it. Particularly when they're non-divisive games and the score is so different, that's where I go look into the review and I read it and I see, okay, did they actually play the game? Why did they hate it? Is there an agenda here? Is there a bias here? But look, to be honest, if they didn't have any of that, then it's a valid review. Then it's a valid opinion that they just didn't like it. It didn't vibe with them. But more often than not, there's probably a reason why. So who knows?
Yeah.
I give all of Zack Snyder's movies like a 5 and a below, but that's not me hating Zack Snyder.
Yeah, but I can see why you came to that conclusion. Whereas I can't see how someone came to the conclusion to give It Takes Two a 6.
Yeah, true.
That's just my opinion, but
that's true. Maybe they played by themselves.
Okay, like Red Dead Redemption. There's rumors swirling that there's going to be a remaster for PS5. Where it started with the Korean ratings board that popped up. That doesn't mean anything concrete because that's happened before and games haven't been put up, but it's an indication. And then there was Take-Two Interactive's earnings call where they said they will be releasing two new iterations of previously released titles in 2024. So... to me, that's a big indicator. I just hope that the second one is GTA 4. I really believe GTA 4 is long overdue for a remaster or something because it is probably the best GTA game, in my opinion.
I agree. It's a bloody phenomenal game.
And they just leave it there and they don't – it just never gets mentioned. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah. It's because GTA 5 is making that shark card money, baby. Yeah. It's just raking it in. But look, Korean ratings board, no one's going to submit a fake game. You know what I mean? So there's intention whenever it falls across the laps of the Korean ratings or other ratings boards. So I think there is heavy credence heavy evidence that this is likely to happen. So, and look, it's great when games are stranded on consoles and then you modernize it. Think it'd be great as maybe a bundle with Red Dead 2 if they do so. I don't know. Have they done a game?
It's probably Red Dead 2 because 2's not on PS5 and you'd think that'd do millions of copies.
Yeah. I'm talking about Red Dead Redemption 2, I should say, as opposed to the second Red Dead, which is Red Dead Redemption 1. But who knows? I think it's a good idea.
Did you ever play Red Dead Revolver?
Never played Red Dead Revolver.
No, me either.
So long as it's not our Grove Street games that are doing this remaster, I think we'll be fine. But
it'd be cool if it came out in a bundle. I would play it again, even though I just played it with John Marston himself. And you would probably play through both too.
I wonder if Undead Undead Nightmare would be part of the bundle because that was very well received as well. Very loved DLC. So
definitely
exciting. I mean, Rockstar, man, they've just got all this IP, like Red Dead and GTAs, and they're just in such a good position. They can live off remastering games like just their old GTAs and even the PSP ports and stuff like the Ballad of Gay Tony and stuff. They probably could
just next generation, just continually remastering and remaking.
That could last some years. But
Well, speaking of remakes, apparently there's going to be a Black Flag remake, Vic.
I saw this.
Assassin's Creed Black Flag remake.
What?
Is it too soon?
Who needs this game? Like, I just...
2013, the original came out, so it's been 10 years.
Let me put it like this. I think there's a lot of burnout and fatigue, franchise fatigue with Assassin's Creed. I understand where they're saying, look, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, many will say is the most seminal game in the franchise. Let's remaster or remake that and revitalize the franchise.
By the way, remake, not a remaster.
To basically remake the game to revitalize the franchise. But
do you see them, if they're going to remake it, do you see them then going off and doing a part 2, 3? Is that where they're heading with it? Because that's smart. That is smart.
Because this is the thing. Like, what about Skull and Bones? Is this just like
Skull and Bones is dead? I think they know it. Everyone knows.
No, but you remember they made a deal with the government. They legally have to bring out a game.
They have to do it. Do you reckon they're just like,
look, you've got everything for Skull and Bones. The game is crap, but let's just turn this into an Assassin's Creed. Just bring that system in to Black Flag remake, and we'll just remake the rest of Black Flag using the Skull and Bones system.
You're onto something. You're actually onto something. I think you're onto something. No, it's they're on. I think they would have cancelled it years ago if they weren't under strict, government.
Tell me if you agree with this, Dan. A lot of games that we've loved in the past that are considered our personal classics, we only love them. A lot of those games, if they were to be remade and come out today, we would not be as good. Like a lot of these games, they were great for the generation they were in, for the moment in time we were there for, because it was the first time we've experienced that gameplay. For instance, Far Cry 3, probably one of my favorite games of all time in terms of open world gameplay sandbox. Far Cry 3 remake has come out, or the remaster or whatever. I had no desire to play that because I've played so many Far Crys after that. I've played so many open world games like that. The magic, it's not that the magic is gone, but it's kind of, I've already experienced and played this. So I don't need to, and I've already got so much more of that content that it's just not going to match my original experience. So I think the same with Black Flag. Like, yeah, Black Flag is also one of my favorite games, like, ever. Like, Assassin's Creed, it is my number one, and I put so many hours into that game. And even the multiplayer, I adored the multiplayer, strangely enough. But I just think if we were to play this game again, is it going to capture that? We're just going to do the same thing of hiding and like assassinating people. We've done this with Valhalla. We've done this with every subsequent Assassin's Creed that's come out. Obviously, maybe lesser with the RPG ones, but is this the revitalizing they want to do? I think it's a good strategy by Ubisoft, because if you want to remake any, it's a sure bet. I personally think they should remake from the ground up the first Assassin's Creed. I think that would bring
That's what they're doing with Mirage, though, really.
Yeah, but, something about the first Assassin's Creed. I honestly think they should start the whole universe again. Reboot it. Mortal Kombat 1. Give it the Mortal Kombat 1 treatment. Reboot it. I presented my idea to you guys in the last episode where I talked about having the RPGs, like the Yakuza-style games where you concentrate on the Templars and the stealth ones with the assassins and all that. But I just, I don't know.
They're going to remake Black Flag, so they already know where the story and the content goes, so you're saving a lot of time in those areas, and you also know the map design, basically, unless they're really remaking and changing everything. If they're sticking to some of that stuff, then you've also got the ship combat, which they've already got, so it should be a quick dev time, and then when they've got all that, then they can start working on a sequel or a possible second game. That's where I think they've got a long-term vision. But you've also got that there's 11 Assassin's Creed games currently in development. I think that is absolutely
in development.
Ridiculous. Jeez. That is absolutely ridiculous.
I thought you meant there's been 11 Assassin's Creed games out. Yeah, no, it is.
It's already burnt out with Valhalla, sort of. And then you're going to have Mirage. Then you're going to have the mobile games. Then you're going to have the China one. It just keeps going and going. And they're going to run into the same issue.
I just thought of this idea, and I don't know if it's brilliant, but I think it's a good idea. Do you want to hear my great idea for Assassin's Creed Black Flag remake, what they need to do?
Mm.
So a big thing about Black Flag is the ship-to-ship combat, and especially when you're in the ship-to-ship, you have to board the other ship and fly over to the other ship like a swashbuckling pirate, and there's a bit of a fight sequence where you've got to fight a couple of enemies. Do you know what I reckon they should do, Dan? For the normal on the boots on the ground when you're on the ground, keep the assassin stuff, you know, the stealth, the hidden blade, all that. When you're in those moments where you're swashbuckling, because everyone knows where you are, there's no stealth, that's where you have the RPG gameplay. And you could have this game that has the best of both worlds, because that one is where you've got a pirate, you need your sword and shield. You're not going to be able to sneak because it's an all-out war. Everyone's going to see you on the ship. So you use that RPG, make the enemies harder and make the ships harder to board, because the boarding of the ships in the original was pretty easy. Once you disable the ship, you just assassinate and kill everyone. It's really easy. But yeah, I don't know. There's an opportunity there, Dan, to mix the gameplays up really well. You know, but
if it's a carbon copy, yeah, it'll still do well because it's got a big name that everyone loved Black Flag, so it will still sell millions of copies. But you can't help but think, what if they got all these Ubisoft studios together and did something like GTA 6, like the GTA series, where you release one every 5 to 10 years, but you put everyone on it, you put $1 billion on it, and see what you can do. Would that strategy work for them? That's the thing. They might not be good enough to pull that off. So
they just need the Mortal Kombat 1 reboot treatment.
Yeah, but
you can't have 13 games in development, Dan. How the hell do you have 13 games in development?
Well, that's just Assassin's Creed games. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, Ubisoft. You can do better than that.
Yeah, you can look up the list of the games. Not all confirmed, by the way, but
yeah,
I think there's eight confirmed and three. Yeah, something like that.
And look, I know a lot of them are maybe mobile or portable.
Yeah.
Games, but still 13 or 8.
There's a VR, a couple of VRs.
Yeah. Ridiculous, though.
Okay. EA Sports FC is reportedly set to release the 29th of September. This is EA Sports' first time breaking out of the FIFA name, and they're calling it EA Sports Football Club, I guess. Football Club FC. Coming to PS5, PS4. How do you think they're going to fare, like, without that FIFA name? Is it going to be hard for them to transition?
Nah, they are the 2K of the soccer. Like, FIFA is beyond, I mean, it's more than 2K by a mile, a metric mile. Like, it is so far ahead of its competitors in terms of the most popular game that I think the FIFA, if you take off the FIFA brand, no one's going to care. They're just going to see EA Sports FC. They're going to see the classic cover with two players and a bit of grass. And here's the other thing, Dan. There's no competitor. It's not like there's going to be a competitor that's going to take the FIFA name. I, for the longest time, thought Konami should take it with their
Pro Evo. Football. Yeah.
Yeah, or FIFA eFootball, or, you know, some other company comes in with the FIFA, buys a FIFA license and makes their own game. But yeah, look, they're just so far ahead that the FIFA name is essentially worthless because they've still got all the licensing. They've still got all the FIFA licensing and all the official players.
How does that work? But they don't have the name. I don't understand how that works.
It's a separate thing. It's like the licensing, I think, is separate. So,
but is it the same body approving both?
Probably. I don't know. Probably. But they're probably separate deals.
That's what I thought. Why wouldn't they let... Because they wanted more for the name, right? FIFA wanted more for them. This is where it broke apart.
Well, the thing is, FIFA thought they
could strong arm them.
Yeah, And FIFA thought that EA needed them more than they needed AA. And EA, like, we don't need you guys. Like, so it's.
But they do need the players. They really need the players. That would be a game. If they. Do you remember the cricket games? How they all had all the fake names? Because they couldn't get the.
Ricky Ponty.
That actually hurts.
Yeah, it does. So, and the likeness, you couldn't have the likeness.
And the likeness. Like,
The only one who was there was Ricky Ponty. He was the only one that looked beyond realistic. But everyone else. Glenn McGrith, Brett Leap.
That's what I mean. They're all different. So you wouldn't want to have that.
The other thing I want to mention, this was in May, that EA Sports is officially splitting up with EA. So
they're
basically separating as a company, which I think is a great idea. Because if you think about the tactics, like, and here's the thing, EA, I actually think they've done a better job. They've actually come a long way from being the world's most hated company and all that sort of stuff. And their quality's improved with things like the Haze Light guys, and obviously Farrah's and It Takes Two, or
Motive,
Motive or Respawn with Star Wars, or even, you know, Battlefront, where they turned it around. You know, they've done well. And those games are, you know, the EA Sports games, they're annualized titles. They're more mass market, mass money, mass monetization, and mass release in terms of annualized games. But the EA games side of things, Electronic Arts, they are obviously now focusing more on quality, more non-annualized release. So there's almost different strategies these two companies have, or these two sections have, where they're working against each other in the way that their tactics are completely different. One's like, so I think it's a good idea for them to split, because they are in a way working in two different directions.
Remember, they picked up the F1 series of Codemasters. They've got a baseball game now. They've got the PGA Tour games. They've brought them back with official licensing. So they're really going hard on, you know, they've obviously got Madden, NHL.
Yeah.
So they've got a lot of sports games, and maybe they'll do cricket again. Who knows? Maybe they'll do other sports. Who knows?
Here's the thing is, cricket is like second to soccer in terms of popularity, right?
That's what I don't understand. It never sold that well. Why?
I think console gaming in India is not a huge market. Like India is crazy about PUBG, but that's more mobile. Like do you think that'll change
in the next 10, 20 years? No.
Yeah, maybe. There's a lot of things to consider, like imports and tax, and
because PUBG, as you said, is massive. Massive.
Yeah. But here's the thing, like, there is a lot of countries that play cricket. So there's obviously more, but the other big thing is
England,
America don't play it. And America is the big market, isn't it?
That's it. So, that's why it's not worth it.
That's why you've got big ants making subpar cricket games.
Well, what other sports could they capture? I'm just trying to think. Is there any untapped sports?
I mean, Fight Night. Isn't it Fight Night EA? Is Fight Night EA?
Oh, yeah, they got UFC. Yeah, they do have UFC.
Yeah, but I think Fight Night would be better than UFC as well.
They don't have wrestling, which isn't I wouldn't say it's a sport, but sports entertainment.
Yeah, sports entertainment. But I think a boxing one, like a Fight Night, would be good for them. That would make
Oh, boxing. Night, yeah, 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 yeah. Ah, yeah.
Dude, do you remember playing like Fight Night Round 4? How crazy
that
was
fun.
Games,
yeah. Where's the so boxing good. Games? You're right.
100%. Yeah.
That could be cool.
My career and all that sort of stuff.
I heard they're bringing back the EA Sports. It's in the game.
It's in the game.
I heard they're bringing that back.
Yeah. I don't know how that'd fare with a basketball game like NBA Live bringing that back. Well,
they've tried, haven't they?
Yeah, tried and failed.
That was one that they really tried.
Old school Need for Speed. Just bring that back.
Mortal Kombat 1 is having a live stream today. So by the time you may be hearing this, they're doing a live stream, a combat cast. So
that'll come with a new character.
New character.
That's what Ed Boon said. It's going to probably be a new trailer, and they're probably going to do a new character, a new cameo. That's probably the way they're going to weekly do it. A new character, a new cameo, new stage.
Are you still hot on this? Are you still looking forward to everything?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Everyone's been really hot on this game. Like Sonic Fox and like, you know, Maximilian, Uncaged Games, Ketchup Mustard. They've all been really positively receiving this game. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Foxy Grandpa. Like there's a lot of them that are really, Like, a lot of the people who played it and are big Mortal Kombat players and commentators, they're all really liking this much more than MK11. So, and everyone, you know what everyone's been saying? MK11, we played half an hour. We already knew what the game's going to be about, what to do, what the meta is, like how it's going to play. Everyone has played hours and hours of MK1, still have not peeled the first layer of the onion. Like, the apparently this game is emphasizing creativity, and there's just so much creativity in this game. Like, it's endless in terms of the possibilities. So it's just looking really exciting. And I'm glad they're rebooting the story, because I'm one of the rare people that play Mortal Kombat mainly for the story. And I could see that in MK11, they were running out of ideas. And I actually really didn't like the direction they went with a lot of the MK10 and 11 stuff. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff here, man. Like, Scorpion and Sub-Zero now brothers, you know, Melina and is no longer like a clone or bred from a like Shang Tsung. It's interesting. So
every
poll I do on YouTube,
every poll I do, Mortal Kombat wins as most anticipated game.
You got to remember MK10 or an 11. Oh, I think it's MKX is like just always on the top of the MPD charts in terms of sales and stuff. Like,
and I've never covered the game on my channel ever.
Yeah.
And it wins every poll. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah. Like, like last year or 2 years ago, MKX was still like polling in the best sales and stuff, you know? Like, it was years after it came out.
You think it's worth trying to interview the voice actors for those characters?
I think so.
Would that be interesting content?
Yeah. Because you're starting, everyone would be like just absolutely soaking everything the guys say. You know why, Dan? There's so much mystery to the entire reboot of the universe. Like, no one knows who the villain is. No one knows, like, Sub-Zero and Scorpion are brothers now. What does this mean? How's the clans, the Shirai Ryu and the Lin Kuei going to start up again? Like, everything is a blank slate and everyone's just begging for information about it. So I think voice actors, Dan, is a good idea, because it's not like if you did MK11 voice actors.
I know.
Everyone knows the story. Everyone knows what's going on. But this one, there's so much mystery.
But isn't Ed Boon Scorpion's voice actor?
He does the get over here.
Get over here. Oh, but not, that's it.
Like, that's his,
okay. How funny. Get over here.
Get over here. I think he does, he might have voiced someone
else. I'd love to talk
to
Ed Boon.
Oh, man, he's so down to earth, that guy. He just seems like a nice guy.
There was an announcement, Vike, a week or so ago for a game I played last year. If you remember, I played a game called Scorn. Well, it is coming to PS5, interestingly, because I thought it was an Xbox exclusive, but obviously it was a timed year exclusive. It's basically a puzzle game, very atmospheric horror puzzle game. Really weird, but every time I think about it, I was super engaged the whole way through. It was a weird world, but geez, it was cool. It's worth giving a look.
It always gave me Doom vibes when I saw the game, but it's a puzzle game, isn't it?
It's not like Doom. Don't go and think it's Doom, trust me.
But don't you agree that they're sort of trying to advertise it like this FPS, Doom-like game?
Yeah, they tried to make it more exciting. It really isn't. It's very slow, the gameplay.
I feel like, but 64 in Metacritic, we're just talking about.
I disagree with, but yeah, it was a cool game. I would say it was in my top 10 of last year. Maybe, I don't, did we do a top 10 list? Maybe it was on there.
Did.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I switch and swerve every other week. So, but I enjoyed it. So that's coming to PS5. Let me just check that date. It is coming soon. You don't know when, but it's coming soon. There you go. Probably end of the year, I would say.
Oh, nice.
All right, Vike, I wanted to also talk about this one. So Rainbow Six Siege, a number of months ago, they were able to block people using mouse and keyboard on console on PS5. So there was a big thing with the rank system in Siege, where, and I played a bunch of rank Siege, and you'd run into people on mouse and keyboard with a clear unfair advantage, especially for a game like Siege. And they were using mouse and keyboard on a PS5. And now they did something, Siege, to sort of help that. And now it's come out that they've had an 80% reduction in mouse and keyboard users. So that's pretty good. I just thought I'd mention that, because it was something that was really pissing me off. And not only that, but there was cheating involved as well when you have mouse and keyboard. There's
even Call of Duty mouse and keyboard, like playing Warzone, that was frustrating. Mm. Like we just want to control our only lobbies. And yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for, you know, bringing everyone into the lobby and, you know, cross play and all that. But when there's a clear difference in peripherals, it's a clear advantage, you know. This isn't like fighting games where some people can use a fight stick and some people use a controller. There's a precision involved and a quickness involved with a mouse and a keyboard and, you know, using both hands at the same, like it's so completely different.
And they also had programs that allowed them to have no recoil on the mouse and stuff. It's completely cheating. So it's really toxic in Siege, a cheating vibe. Why is that? Is it because
There's one reason. There's friendly fire. As soon as there's friendly fire in a game, it's just toxic, man. Everyone's just going to abuse it.
Oh, the friendly fire. Did I ever tell you a story about these two guys?
They set you up.
Oh, man. They set me up with some bomb and got me banned. It's so toxic, that game, the community.
It's so hard to battle that. How do you battle toxicity like that? It's tough.
COD's the same in many respects.
As soon as when there's no friendly fire, it's much harder to be toxic, I think, because your teammates can't be toxic.
And it breeds so much competitiveness, that game, whatever reason. People are very serious, very competitive on that game, get really angry.
Yeah. I do remember back in the day, the way people would troll me on Call of Duty would be, I would be running like a silenced weapon and running around, and some guy would just be following me with a pistol shooting, like to get me on the radar or try to block me while I'm running, get in front of me. That's all they could do.
I've had that. Yeah.
That's all they could do. They'd get sick of it and eventually stop. But with a game with friendly fire, you shoot someone, they're dead forever. Like it's permanent, like in terms of the annoyance you could have. It's not something you can get sick of because you've just ruined their day.
Especially if there's one round to go and you throw the match in ranked. Like that is brutal. Really bad. And it happens.
And not only that, if you get killed in Call of Duty, you come back in a second. In Siege, you have to wait minutes for the next round or whatever's going to happen. So it's hard, man. Like it's a game like that. It's just so sad that there's so much potential, but there's so many ways to abuse that. And it's hard to fight against that, I guess.
They've introduced, like, I don't know when they did, but if you kill too many people, you get banned for a certain amount. That's how I got banned, because they set me up. Got them both cells killed, and I took the hit, and then I got banned. And yeah, you get banned for like an hour, and then you get banned for a day, and then a week.
Yeah,
you know, if you keep doing it. But people make new accounts and stuff like that. So smurfing.
Mm.
Okay, Nickelodeon All Star Brawl, which is a game that is not so dissimilar to PlayStation All Stars, but you had no care in the world for it, Vike. It was also like Multiverses and Battle Royale, Smash. There is a sequel coming, apparently. I didn't know the first one did that well. But apparently, there's a sequel coming. It's the worst-kept secret, according to Push Square here. So,
I don't think everyone... Now, I'm trying to remember. From what I remember, Nickelodeon All-Stars was hotter and more well-received than Multiverses. So...
Tough to say. The problem is they didn't have the voice acting for Nickelodeon, and then they added it in, I believe, after the fact.
Who knows? Look, I see Aang and Korra, and I'm always a sucker for Avatar, so that excites me.
They got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, SpongeBob. They got
Jimmy Neutron.
They've got some decent IP there.
Yeah. So it's a strength in the IP, but, you know. Dan,
you can't help but think they'd be better off licensing that to another game of this nature.
What do you mean?
Licensing these characters to Warner Brothers for Multiverses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see either. Like, because they've got so much IP, like SpongeBob, CatDog, TMNT, Avatar, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think I said that. So, you know, they've just got a lot of different, you know, IP that can be used.
Did
so
you ever play Multiverses?
No, Dan. I played PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale for years.
Do you know what's so strange?
One of the greatest games I played.
With Multiverses? What's strange, Dan? It's gone until next year. Apparently, that was all an open beta. And now they've closed the game. as of June 25th, and now they're going to relaunch the game next year. I think it's a smart tactic because they've lost probably 90% of their players, and now they're going to relaunch it again
and get that
and try and get a bit of the players back.
Yeah,
it might not be a bad idea.
I don't know. It's a weird tactic. It is a weird tactic.
Because how can you be in open beta for that long, then turn the game? I've never seen a game, like, you can't even play it, from what I know, online. It's gone, so weird. Hmm. Okay, last story before we get into the Microsoft stuff. Last of Us 3 motion capture.
Yes, it looks like it's started, or it's going to be starting.
Yeah, so that's effectively, that sort of confirms that that's their next game, right? Unless they're working on two new IPs.
Yeah, I think there was some leaks on, I think, Reset Era that were basically, and they were fairly credible, apparently. So a few outlets have picked up on this, including like PlayStation Lifestyle, that the Last of Us 3 motion capture work will begin this year. It probably matches up with what we think. I do wonder where the hell Factions is, but it probably matches up that there is, you know, pre-production or production starting in The Last of Us Part 3. I think it was very clear from Last of Us Part 2, the remake of Last of Us Part 1, that their next game is going to be Last of Us Part 3. I'm very confident in saying that Last of Us, they're going to stick with it until they're done with it. They're not going to try a different game and then go back to it, because it was just selling money, and, you know, it's obviously the TV show and everything like that. It just,
I wonder if this will be the last game. There'll be a conclusion to The Last of Us 3, and they'll cut it off at 3.
It'll be Ellie's story. I wonder if she'll die.
I would say she would die.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to die in this place. Does anyone survive? I wonder, have you ever thought about, like, is it going to have Abby again? For one, and for two, if it's just Ellie, will you play as someone else? Because that you always play, in both games, you played as Ellie and Joel, right? And now in this one, obviously, things are changing.
Yeah, you played as, but I think the thing is, spoilers for The Last of Us.
And you play as Abby, so you play as three in the second game. Three characters.
Please, I would urge anyone who's listening now and hasn't played The Last of Us Part 2, please play it, because it is very well worth your time. Anyway, spoilers coming up. So I think the way the game ended in Part 2, with Abby basically running away with Lev and Ellie coming to terms with her vengeance and then coming back home, and Dina's left her and she's got nothing. She can't even play a guitar because she lost her fingers. Like, the cost of revenge of losing everything, even her, like, most sacred talent and happiness. I don't know. What is there to explore with her? You know, is it going to be her trying to make up with Dina and Abby? I don't think that's a good idea. I think they need to, her redemption. I think a redemption arc is necessary for her, but of her maybe finding her humanity, of her understanding or making up for her revengeful nature. And
I see,
but it shouldn't center around Abby or Dina.
I see some sort of villain group coming in and wiping Tommy's damn that whole civilization out, something like that, something really huge like that, where there's mass deaths, I would say.
I definitely think Abby has to be in the game, in whether it's like an encounter or a little segment where they cross paths. Like, they can't leave
just
Abby
let her go. Well, that's what I'm saying. And also, if Ellie's got those fingers gone, will that affect gameplay? I was thinking about that.
You still only need a trigger for the gun, maybe the knife. But
yeah, because, you know, they do those little details. But
yeah,
interesting. We'll keep chatting about this over the few years. Next few years.
Do you want to know a fun fact about missing fingers, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
In Assassin's Creed, the original games, the assassin had no ring finger on their, I think it's their right hand.
Why? Even,
because that's where the hidden blade comes out. So the finger's gone, so that the hidden blade goes through the finger. That's how it was in the original Assassin's Creed. I think in the later ones they took that out. But then Yeah, cool. I think in the later ones they took that out, but yeah, I think in Mirage he's missed his finger, which shows it's sort of like back to the roots. But I know Altair and stuff didn't have a finger. I'm pretty sure Ezio didn't. So I'm pretty sure. So I remember seeing that detail. I remember seeing that detail in the original Assassin's Creed, and I thought, how cool is that?
And then they changed it to like Spider-Man, sort of. You know how Spider-Man now it's an electronic thing. Isn't Spider-Man like the web's electronic now or something? And not.
No, it was all that wrong? Like other way around. So Sam Raimi decided he wanted to make it biological, but it was always a gadget. It was always a gadget in the.
That's what I'm saying. But Tom Holland's version is a gadget. Yep. Yes or no?
But that's how it always was in the comics.
And Andrew Garfield's?
Yep, gadget.
Right. And did they, maybe in the movie, they actually said something about that. That's why I'm thinking of it. Yeah. Anyway.
So I think apparently.
We're off track again, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say Leonardo da Vinci in Assassin's Creed 2.
We've really gone off track.
Doesn't need to cut off the finger.
Part 3. And we've somehow come up with Spider-Man and Assassin's Creed out of that. We can connect anything. Okay, Xbox, what have you got for us, Vic? We did an episode where you dissected the fuck out of the merger, the Activision deal. We're not going to go too in depth, but give us some of the research you got for us collated.
I think this is way juicier. The original episodes we've done have been very dry, very businessy, but this is like the court case is happening. There have been juicy emails brought to light and leaked documents and people trying to, there was a lot of redacted documents with a lot of redactions, but then people have looked through the Sharpie. They didn't like black it out properly and like under light, they saw the values and the figures. So a lot of things have come to light, which is really interesting.
It's getting scrappy. This fight.
You love the goss.
It's in the mud now, is it? It's in the mud.
In a way. I mean, so here are the main takeaways, and I want to say, I'm going to say it point by point, not in any particular order, but I'll try to keep a flow through. And most of this is going to be related to Sony, but there's a bit to say about Microsoft too, obviously, as we are a PlayStation podcast. First thing. So there's a heavily redacted 2019 email that came to light through this trial, this court case, that Microsoft has discussed, quote, spending Sony out of business. So this was Matt Booty, who is the Xbox game studio boss. He wrote this to the Xbox CFO, Tim Stewart, in this email. He said, quote, if we think that video game content matters in 10 years, we might look back and say, totally would have been worth it to lose $2 billion or $3 billion in 2020 to avoid a situation where Tencent, Google, Amazon, or even Sony have become the Disney of games and own the most valuable content. Sony is really the only other player who could compete with Games Pass, and we have a 2-year and 10 million subs lead. And basically they were talking about how they could spend Sony out of business. And they were, so essentially Matt Booty is saying here that like with streaming services and how Disney has just taken over everything and there are these monopolies, even with, you know, Google and Amazon, Sony are sort of like that in the gaming space. So that's really interesting that Microsoft.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. But I think also that it makes sense that Microsoft, the strength in Sony is the way they've got their studios and their IP. The strength in Microsoft is their money and their capital. And it just makes sense that what Matt Booty's saying here is that we can spend Sony out of business. Now, the interesting thing about this email is, I know, it is a flex, but the interesting thing to say, Dan, is the whole thing has been Sony arguing that Microsoft are monopolizing. And
yeah, so why would he say that?
Well, this is a leaked email. Obviously, it wasn't meant to, you know, these are emails that have come to light.
Okay.
So I think obviously this doesn't bode well for Microsoft, but I'll show you later that we also see Sony lying out of there.
How do they get these leaked emails? I'm curious.
No idea. It's just things that come to light and, you know, isn't Microsoft weird? We'll find leaked emails of Sony. Sony will find them just presented as evidence and those sort of things.
So that's the first thing. You can use them in court.
Microsoft discussed spending Sony out of business. Now, I want to go into the Microsoft spending and what they've done so far, right? So the first thing I wanted to talk about was Microsoft's a lot has come to light about what Microsoft's tactics were and the studios they were looking to buy. So I'm going to show you.
There was a big list of who they wanted, isn't it?
There was a big list. I'm going to give you three separate lists, all right? The first list is that they're called the Mergers and Acquisitions Final Watch List, Xbox Game Studios. And these are some of the studios they were looking at. Thunderful, Supergiant Games, Niantic, Zynga, Playrix, Bungie, IO Interactive, and Scopely. IO
not
for Hitman,
IO Interactive.
Bungie, Halo.
Stay away.
I've got some news about IO Interactive in a sec.
Oh, no.
That's one list, Dan. The other list, 17 top candidates for consideration on console and PC. I'm going to say a few of them. Oh, I'll say all of them. Behavior Interactive, People Can Fly, Remedy, Housemark,
Remedy.
IO, Supergiant Games, Bungie, Crytek, Playdead, Manticore, Larian Studios, Rebellion, Thunderful, 11-Bit Studios, Bohemia, Sega is a big one as a publisher, and Paradox Interactive. So this is crazy, man. Like, they are looking at all of these developers.
Are they still looking at these? Is this recent?
I mean, well, they can't. For instance, no, these are either old or, you know, leaked, aged or dated leaked documents, because obviously they're not going to be looking at Housemark anymore because they're being bought by PlayStation. Obviously they can't look at Bungie anymore, you know, Bungie as well. So
do we know the date on that list?
I think 2020 maybe.
Yeah.
So
that sounds right.
And it's just crazy, Dan. Like, Crytek, what benefit does Crytek have to you guys? What benefit does, you know, it just Housemark.
They've got Crysis and Hunt Showdown.
Yeah, but.
But. Yeah.
Is that really what you want? Like Housemark, for instance, I get Housemark, but they've had a relationship with PlayStation for all this time. Why would you want them when there are way better studios that you could have a better relationship with? I just think they're trying to, once again, they're trying to spend Sony out of business. There's also another studio.
So you're saying their intentions are just to piss.
Gobble up. And we've seen recently with news, Dan, with what are they called? THQ Nordic. What are they? I forgot what they're called. But those guys. Yeah, THQ Nordic. Oh, I forgot their name. The guys who went Saints Row and stuff like that.
Deep Silver.
Deep Silver's a developer. The Embracer Group. Embracer Group. We see how they're failing right now. They're in a bad spot, and they're losing, they're leaking and losing a lot of money, and they need to offload a lot of stuff because they've just tried to gobble up so much, and now they're finding it hard once the economy's gotten a bit tougher.
Well, they picked the worst studios to gobble up, in my opinion. I don't know. Yeah.
But I just get that vibe of this sort of, we've got money, let's just purchase whatever we can. Like Crytek and Housemark. It's Playdead, I understand, but you know, some of these are just strange. Like Bungie, I get, I don't know, it's some of these Supergiant.
Bungie and now Sony,
yeah, exactly. And here's the other one, Dan. So, developers to watch, this was a third list. They had, and I'll name a few of them, Counterplay Games.
Playdead are incredible. I wish they'd released their new game.
So this is a list called Developers to Watch. They had Bonfire Studios, I think A44, which is the guys who made Ashen, Counterplay, these are the guys who made Godfall, they had Ember Lab, the Kena guys. Ember Lab, the Kena guys, which is a PlayStation exclusive. They had, I guess, Hazelight was on this list.
They're trying to hurt PlayStation relationships that aren't fully, like Ember are with PlayStation, but they're not owned by them.
Exactly.
Sneak
Hazelight was on this, Dan.
Hazeline.
Hello Games. No Man's Sky. Moon Studios. Oh, that makes sense. Munfish with Atomic Heart. Striking Distance with the Callisto Protocol. Hollow Knight.
Why don't you just grab everyone? I mean, will there be any left?
And see, this is where it gives me the vibe of like their purchases aren't that targeted. It is a bit Embracer Group-ish and it's a bit reckless because, look, I'm not a Sony fanboy or anything, but when I look at the way they've purchased, they only purchase studios they've had an existing relationship with, like Housemark, that are more organic in the way they grow these things, Insomniac, these sort of things where they've had a relationship, they've had second party exclusives, and they're already somewhat in the fold, right?
Do you know what? Sorry, I'm going to cut you off. Do you know what a fanboy actually means in the dictionary?
No, what does it mean?
It's in the dictionary. A male fan who obsesses over comics, music, movies, or science fiction.
That's a weird definition. I think the definition, the colloquial definition is much different. I think the colloquial definition would be more like blind to any criticism, or, you know, just loyal to a company without any criticism. But and the other thing I will say, Dan, is that Xbox tried to purchase Sega. So there was a leaked email.
Sega have gone downhill, though. They're not big.
Phil Spencer, there was an email that was redacted but leaked that basically said, Phil Spencer's writing to request strategy approval to approach Sega Sammy regarding a potential acquisition of their Sega gaming studios. And it just goes on talking about things like their revenue and operating income and stuff. But they're basically saying, hey, can we start looking into this? And the thing they said.
Well, they obviously did create a relationship because Like a Dragon was a timed exclusive, which is Sega. Yeah. They've got a relationship with Persona.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, Persona's PlayStation exclusive. I know Persona's now coming to Xbox with Persona 3.
That's what I mean.
And
the
tactics game and all that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The relationship's obviously built over the last little bit, hasn't it?
And apparently Microsoft wanted to acquire Square Enix as part of their plan for mobile Games Pass. So look, and they wanted to bolster their historically, quote, scant presence in the Asian market. So, you know, it's just crazy the wide range of studios they're looking to buy. But that's something that's come to light. The other thing is Phil Spencer apparently admitted that they have lost, quote, lost the console wars. So we saw this come out a while ago where in a document they basically said that Sony, they have engaged in what the industry refers to as the console wars. Sony is the dominant player in consoles. Sony PlayStation for over 2 years and through five generations has been the leading consoles in both worldwide and US. Sony's gamer base is redacted as large as Xbox's worldwide and redacted larger than
But they also said that Nintendo are up. We're running third.
Yeah, they're running third.
In a three-horse race. That was their...
Yeah.
That was what they said, didn't they?
Yeah. So and he quoted saying they lost the console wars, which... I don't think it's a shocking thing. Like, it's you got to be objective.
What, the console war has ended, has it? Is it
an ongoing war, but it's funny that they're saying that they've lost. Yeah, it does. I think they're trying to make it sound like we should buy Activision. We've lost the console wars. We need this. And Sony are saying Microsoft are so powerful. Look at what they're spending and the money they have. But I want to go into the next one.
It doesn't make sense, the argument. We need Activision, but we're going to still put it on PlayStation.
Well, yeah.
So what are you getting out of it?
Well, the thing is you get the money. You get the money in the
They've just said that they can outspend Sony in money.
Yeah. Well, Call of Duty is too big though. But it's sort of like how Sony's deal with Bungie, right? Bungie are still allowed to launch their games on other consoles. They have creative freedom to do that, but it's for the profits. It's probably for the talent as well and that sort of thing. So
Do you think it'll go through at this stage?
I don't know. I think there has been a deliberation, has there not? But I'm not too sure what's going to happen, actually. So it's just really
Has there been a verdict for the recent...
I thought... That's
because they've been in court and everything, haven't they? This is all from the court, the actual...
Exactly,
the trial.
And what you got to remember is that there is still that $3 billion that if this deal doesn't go through, Microsoft have to pay
$3 billion.
Activision. How big is $3 billion? That's an insane amount of money. So
that pays for the next three or four CODs.
Yeah. So
that's pretty crazy. There was a
conspiracy theory that Bobby Kotick was trying to sabotage the deal to say they can get the money because they're like, this isn't worth it. But look, the other thing I wanted to, there's a few more things I wanted to say. So that were the big things. The other things I wanted to say was let's talk about next gen. Actually, let's stay on Xbox right now. And let's go to Call of Duty because that is another thing we should talk about. So I want to talk about Call of Duty in two ways. So First of all, I want to talk about it in relation to Bethesda, and then I want to talk about it as the franchise itself, because Call of Duty has been the biggest argument for Sony. Like, you know, that's the reason, right? So First thing is Bethesda. I want to talk about Bethesda briefly. They were apparently blindsided by promises to keep Call of Duty multi-platform. There were two emails leaked from Pete Hines to Phil Spencer. So the first one is, or the first one was from Pete Hines to Phil Spencer, and the second one was from Pete Hines to Todd Howard and a few others. So
imagine
the first
being
one was
CC'd in those emails.
I know, yeah. The first one was basically saying that they were surprised to see a blog post from Xbox. That blog post basically talked about how Microsoft will continue to make Call of Duty and other popular Activision Blizzard titles available on PlayStation throughout the existing agreement. Yeah. Right? And they said, and then what this email, what Pete Hines also said is, well, look at this other blog post about us, about ZeniMax, saying, this is different from how Microsoft approached acquiring ZeniMax. Microsoft is seeing, while they're seeing through any contractual obligations like timed exclusives, they're making future Bethesda titles like Starfield exclusive to Xbox and PC. So these guys are basically saying, I just want to make sure I understand how I think about the above when speaking to devs and employees who ask, as well as Todd, myself, and anyone who else might get asked in interviews. Because you're saying in one blog post, Activision Blizzard, we're going to have it released, you know, we're going to support the other consoles and make it available to everyone and support Sony and commit to Sony. And then, but then you're saying, oh, but for ZeniMax and Bethesda, we're not going to do anything. We're going to make it exclusive. And then this email from Pete Hines continues on. He says, I'm confused. Is the below not the opposite of what we were just asked to do with our own titles? Because they're saying Sony will, and because basically there was another, blog post, and they quoted saying, we've committed to Sony that we will also make them available on PlayStation beyond the existing agreement into the future so Sony fans can continue to enjoy the games we love. So this is talking about Call of Duty and Activision Blizzard. And basically Pete Hines saying, did anyone at Xbox think about giving us a heads up on this? Todd is going to DICE Awards in a couple of weeks. Don't you think a journo might find him and press him on this? On why the below it's okay for COD or Activision Blizzard games.
Well, he just won't comment.
Elder Scrolls? Yeah, but it's basically Pete Hines is saying, Todd's going to DICE. Has anyone not prepped him, media prepped him for, because there's going to be a journo who's going to pick this up and say, well, why is it okay for COD and Activision Blizzard games to be on every console, but Elder Scrolls and Starfield to be only exclusive? And Pete Hines is basically annoyed at, or well, I'm saying he's annoyed, judging from this email, about why, or it's more questioning, I should say. I'll be a bit more objective. He's questioning why they haven't been trained, why they haven't been communicated to about this, because they need to know. So I just thought that was something
really
interesting.
So you think it's double standards?
Nothing is double standards, just lack of communication. I understand if you want to go Call of Duty is for everyone, we're committed to that, and Bethesda, we bought you, we want to keep you guys only on us as part of our strategy. That's fine. But it just looks like there's some conflicting strategy, like they don't know what they're doing, and there's no communication as well. That's one thing, because while that's okay, they haven't made it clear to Pete Hines, to Todd Howard and those sort of guys where a journalist can ask them. Now, the second thing I wanted to quickly go on is Call of Duty. So basically there was more redacted documents, Dan, and this is what I said, where they didn't Sharpie it properly and people have looked through and found what those redacted and blocked parts of these documents have said. And it gives you some interesting statistics about Call of Duty, because remember when we read these documents in the original episode, we kept saying these things are redacted. Some of these have come to light.
Okay,
and this is what it says, Dan.
Give it to me.
So this is a document provided by Jim Ryan to the FTC, and it just wasn't redacted properly. So in 2021, and I'm going to say redacted as in this is the part that was redacted, but we can sort of see through it. And the numbers we see aren't clear, but it looks like it makes out to be a number 4.
Right.
But I'll say redacted.
Right. Okay.
In 2021, over redacted 14 million users by device spent 30% or more of their time playing Call of Duty. I'll say that again. 2021, 14 million people spent over 30% of their time playing Call of Duty.
I might have been one of those.
But Dan, over 6 million spent more than 70% of their time on Call of Duty, and about 1 million spent 100% of their gaming time on Call of Duty. This
didn't
is in
play
PlayStation
anything else.
Then. So this is engagement on PlayStation consoles. 1 million people only played COD. only for 100% of the year.
And how crazy is that? What was the other one?
6 million. 6 million was over 70% of their time, and 14 million was over 30% of their gaming time.
30% is still a lot.
That is. In 2021, Call of Duty players spent an average of redacted 116 hours per year playing COD. COD players spending more than 70% of their time on Call of Duty spent an average of 296 hours.
I was well over that, but yeah.
I know. The other thing, Call of Duty software accounted for over $1 billion in sales for PlayStation consoles. According to The Verge, Sony's redacted documents suggest that Call of Duty games are worth $800 million for PlayStation revenue in the US alone, and seemingly 1.5 billion globally. So 800 million out of the 1.5 billion 2021. So $1.5 billion globally, Call of Duty, Dan. Half of that, over half of that, which is $800 million, was just the US. Was just the US. So it just goes to show how big the market is. And apparently, if you include things like platform spending, hardware, accessories, subscriptions, and services all related to Call of Duty, it's about $13 to $15 billion.
Where's the franchise fatigue on COD? Like,
I know.
It doesn't exist. And,
but yeah, basically, they're just talking about how big Call of Duty is. And I think now we can see that it is. It is. It is a big game. The other thing they were saying was the last game covered by the contract is a Call of Duty title to be released in late 2023, apparently. So there was talk.
There's
that
a game coming out, yeah. Modern Warfare
that
3.
It was. Yeah, but there was a talk that the deal, the Activision deal, would be longer than that. But it looks like there's only going to be maybe one more game.
Okay.
So that's big, man. Like a lot of Call of Duty stuff.
So they didn't. Now, out of all this, they didn't leak the new game. They were able to. They were able to slide.
Rumor
that one
is
under
it's
radar.
Modern Warfare 3, but
yeah,
who knows?
But that never came out in all these documents. They let all the stats slip and everything, but not the new
exactly.
game. Exactly. That's interesting.
Here's the other thing, Dan. So I'm going to go to Starfield now. I want to quickly say this because this is a big one.
Starfield.
One of the other things that came leaked.
My most anticipated
down.
Game.
I know.
Would have come to PS5.
Do you remember what I said last episode? I listened back to it. It was quite funny.
Whoa, what did you say?
About like how I just think Starfield. Yeah, yeah, the 1,000 yeah. hours, mate. The 1,000 hours.
Yeah, and have you reflected?
I'm still hesitant. Hey. I think they can pull it off. I have my opinion.
No. I don't mean you change your opinion, but I mean, have you reflected on that? And do you think you still agree with you everything you said? And
yeah, I think I have maybe slightly different opinion, but I still am worried. I still have the same worries. I just think there is a way they can pull it off, but I'll talk about that another time. So one of the key reasons behind the acquisition of Bethesda's parent company, ZeniMax.
There's a way they can pull it off.
There is.
Oh, my God. After all that.
This is another leaked document. So this is, I don't know if this is leaked or Phil Spence actually just said this in the court, in the FTC hearing versus Microsoft hearing. Phil Spencer revealed that Sony regularly pays competitors to, quote, skip our platform, and Microsoft felt it needed to own Bethesda to compete. This is what Phil Spencer said in the trial, Dan. When we acquired ZeniMax Media, one of the impetus for that is that Sony had done a deal for Deathloop and Ghostwire to pay Bethesda to not ship those games on Xbox. So the discussion about Starfield, when we heard that Starfield was potentially also going to end up skipping Xbox, we can't be in a position as a third place console where we fall further behind on our current ownership. So we've had to secure content to remain viable in the business. Basically, Phil stating that because they were worried about Starfield and Bethesda's future, they decided as one of the big ways to buy them out, which... if you've got the money, I get it. It's a good move. It's probably a smart business move if you're a business owner to buy them if you're like worried about the leaking of exclusives, because ZeniMax have such a wide variety of portfolios of games. Why not? You know, if you're worried about Sony stealing it from you. But it's just something. I'm glad we have that brought to light because it's just good to know that sort of stuff. And it's really interesting, I think, as well. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, well, there's two more things. So one of those is we're going to talk about next-gen consoles for a quick sec.
I do have to go in 6 minutes, all right?
Let's do this. 6 minutes. So in the court documents, discovered among them was basically Microsoft's legal team when they revealed when they expect the next generation of consoles to begin. And they said 2028. Microsoft expects the PlayStation 6 and the next Xbox to launch in 2028, as well as the hardware. Whoa. That's already in the... Yeah.
2028. We are going to change our name. 2026 is confirmed 2 years before the official release.
The PS6 Central
podcast. PS6 Central podcast.
Apparently they also predicted or saying that they think Sony's Project Q handheld will be under $300, which will be interesting. Now, the other thing I wanted to say was the next-gen dev kit. So this is still in the next-gen stuff. So apparently Phil Spencer testified that, Sony was reluctant to ship us PlayStation dev kits. It put us behind on our development for Minecraft on PS5. Apparently Jim Ryan says that Sony was weary and a bit worried about sharing dev kits to next-gen console info to Microsoft, because you're giving it to the studios so they can develop games, but if they're owned by Microsoft, there's a clash and a potential risk there, right? So basically, Jim Ryan said, we simply could not run the risk of a company that was owned by a direct competitor having access to that information. This is when Jim Ryan said in his testimony to the FTC. And basically,
but what about someone like Kojima, who's doing an Xbox and a PlayStation game?
But they're not owned. So Kojima, like, there's probably NDAs they can sign, you know. Yeah, but if you're owned by Microsoft, you can't really do that.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, so this is what Jim Ryan said. The development kits allow developers to have visibility and to work on a feature set that our new consoles would deploy. Delaying dev kits would typically mean a developer may bring its content to the new platform later than it otherwise would be the case. The commercial risk associated with that knowledge of these feature sets leaking to our principal competitor is not something we'd rely on any contract to enforce. So they're saying, if we contracted these guys, we can't rely on that. It's not going to be leaked to Xbox, their owners. So basically that was really interesting. And then Jim Ryan was basically saying that if Call of Duty becomes Xbox, if they are owned by Activision, they probably won't give dev kits to Activision. So that was really interesting. But
I don't know if it's true, but it's kind of intimidation.
It is. And do you know the other thing, Dan? So this actually leads on to my next point, where they basically said, apparently there was an email from Jim Ryan revealing that he actually wasn't worried about the Call of Duty exclusivity. He's like, he actually said, we're pretty sure we'll continue to see Call of Duty on PlayStation for many years to come. So more lying here, man, because we saw Phil Spencer talk about at the start that they were a bit disingenuous. Now here you go, Jim Ryan saying, we're not actually worried, but that's the whole premise of this court case, which in the business world, I get, you just got to say what you got to say to stop things from happening, even if you don't believe it. It's unethical, but that's just anyone who thinks this doesn't happen every day. It's, you know, that's just business.
But aren't you under oath to tell the truth?
Well, that's why he's saying this now. That's what it's, but that's what he's saying. Like they presented that they're worried about Sony, but it looks like this email is like, they're not really worried.
Can't you go to jail if you're caught lying?
But that's not really perjury. Like, that's not, like, that's just they're presenting their worries, but then in an email he's saying he's not really worried. But I think he can get away with that's maybe bending the truth and that sort of thing. They're saying it's a problem and they're making it out to be a big problem.
Yeah, like, I get
him saying it's not a big problem. Yeah. So basically, there was also a exchange between Jim Ryan and Chris Deering, who was a former CEO of Sony Computer Entertainment. And he basically said that this deal by Activision, it's not an exclusivity play at all. That's what Jim Ryan said. He's like, they're thinking bigger than that, and they have the cash to make moves like this. I've spent a fair amount of time with Phil Spencer and Bobby Kotick over the past day, and I'm pretty sure we will continue to see Call of Duty on PlayStation for many years to come. Leaked email by Jim Ryan. He said that word for word. So very interesting to go straight up against it.
I don't like Jim Ryan.
I know.
Never met him.
I mean, look. But
yeah.
And the funny thing is, in the 2 minutes I have left, there was a deposition that between the lawyers and Jim Ryan. And this is what the lawyer said. Lawyer, so you weren't concerned about in May about the transaction? Ryan, I wouldn't say I was concerned at all, but it was really Phil Spencer's response a few months after my email, which sent alarm bells ringing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And then basically he continued to talk about, as of today, this is the lawyer, as of today, would you believe that this transaction between Microsoft and Activision would harm competition? Is that right? Ryan, I believe that this transaction is bad for competition. And then he said, when did you come to that determination? Ryan responded, I don't think it's possible to ascribe a particular date to it. And basically going on to say, there's another one more thing that they said. Microsoft, do you think it would be better if Microsoft kept Activision games on PlayStation? Ryan, yes, I do. Microsoft, so you do believe it's in Microsoft's best interest to make Activision games available on multiple platforms? Ryan, no, I don't agree with that. Microsoft, so if you were running Xbox, would you recommend making Call of Duty and other Activision games exclusive to Xbox and PC? Ryan, that's a hypothetical question I do not wish to answer.
Ooh. Microsoft.
So you don't get to answer? Ryan, I don't have enough knowledge to answer that question. So,
he's trying his best to swivel his way out of this. He's really media trained. He is really well trained.
And this is the lucky last thing I want to say. And that is, there was more leaks about Horizon and Last of Us. And there was a really interesting statistic I just want to mention at the tail end of this. Horizon Forbidden West apparently cost $212 million with over 5 years with 300 employees. So $212 million, 5 years, 300 employees. Last of Us Part Two, $220 million with around 200 employees. So I think they're just maybe good ways or good figures to show how these AAA games are made, what their average budget is. You know, $200 million for Horizon Forbidden West, Last of Us 220, you know, 300 to 200 employees, 5 years. These are sort of the budgets and the employees that they need for these sort of games. Now, quick thing, Dan. Apparently, Hitman's RPG, shooter RPG, is going to be an Xbox exclusive. I know you mentioned that earlier. Their fantasy RPG shooter, apparently, is seemingly planned as an Xbox console.
Not James Bond, the other.
Not James Bond. And Indiana Jones as well. So that's pretty much the broad strokes of everything that was covered. There's a lot more, but, you know, that we thought would summarize the big things for you guys. So hopefully I managed to get it out in a short,
interesting that manner. Interesting that Last of Us is 220 million. That's like Avengers Horizon, Endgame budget.
212 million. 300 employees for Horizon and only 200, not only, but and 200 for Last of Us.
300 over how many years?
5 years.
Yeah. So they're getting paid well over there. I'll tell you. The average salary is like 150K. That's good. All right. We'll continue this conversation next week, Vike.
Yes, we will.
We'll still be on vacation. And we'll continue on with the convo then. And maybe, I know he wanted us to not talk about Death Stranding, so we might have to wait for him.
Yes, gives me more time to finish the game.
All right, guys, it's been a pleasure to serve you. We love you. Take care. We'll see you.
See. PlayStation.